Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are in the throes of the ratification debates, and we're still covering North Carolina. As you noticed last week, we covered a lot of impeachment, and I think the majority of the impeachment conversations have been kind of quelled. And the biggest fear with North Carolina regarding the impeachment process was pretty simple. They were afraid that the impeachment process could include states and all types of public servants. So that was pretty well squashed, and the absurdity just kept on continuing. And you can tell that who some of the anti-federalists were who just kept on clinging on to some of the absurd comments. That being said, we're going to get into more focus on the jurisdiction. But one of the things before we do that I want to put out to you, I want you to, you know, really think about this. If you stopped watching, you know, and I understand that there's, you know, viruses that are going around, there's sicknesses, there's the, you know, all of this mayhem in Congress, especially in the Senate right now. If you stopped plugging into the news and you just kind of recoiled to understand what the heck you need to do and what we need to focus on so that you can send a clear, concise, and succinct message to your state legislators, then we would be far better off, because that way we are working together, creating a singular message. Again, the succinct singular message being comply to the Constitution. We must demand compliance by the federal government, and all public servants must comply to the Constitution. There's a reason why we have oaths. There's a reason why the Constitution was declared the supreme law of the land and not the federal government. There was a reason why the framers, inspired by the divine hand of providence, created the system that we have. So I want you to think and bear in mind that if you put it into context regarding solutions and problems, are you engaged in the solution or are you just a part of the problem? Because as Albert Einstein said, and as I believe, I'm trying to remember the other gentleman that said this, I believe Albert Einstein said, evil will, you know, succeed if, you know, good men do nothing. And or he said, you know, they will, you know, I think so. I think that's what he, it was something like that. But I remember another gentleman, Edmund Burke. The only thing for good, for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And I think Albert Einstein's was that, you know, good men stand by watching and do nothing. You're just going to sit there and watch it. And what do you think you're doing when you're watching the news? What do you think is happening when you're just sitting there allowing them to get you all frustrated and get you focused on the distraction? The best thing all of us can do is to step back, learn exactly what we need to do and how to act instead of react. This way, we can start working together. And we've actually got this movement going, working together with others. So I invite you to become a part of the solution and no longer being a part of the problem. And some of the things that we ask that you can do in helping us be a part of the solution is start advocating the content. Now, you can tell people right up front, GR is self-aware and has completely acknowledged the fact that he is not the polished entertainer in providing, you know, clean, polished content. However, you know, when a young child comes out of the woods running into the town and stutters, are you going to dismiss the child? Or are you going to wait for him to finally get the right word out and say fire or, you know, evil is coming or whatever the message is? there are lots of prudes that just think that, oh, well, you know, it's not good enough. It's just not professional. It's just like reading books. I've met people that, you know, have just, they completely dismiss a book if it is not written, you know, down to or simplified. And because my books are that way, I didn't necessarily write them down. I just kind of let them flow the way I thought. And I've had quite a few people say, well, I'm not going to read that because it's just too difficult. And I go, have you ever read the Bible? And they go, well, yeah, of course I have. And I said, well, how difficult was that? And they go, are you saying your work's equal to the Bible? And I go, not necessarily, but I do believe my work is probably the most relevant work that you could read for today's time. Because if you understand what is, you know, what is it at peril, what we have to lose, then understanding the content of my book is that important. Anyway, I don't want to self-aggrandize myself here, but what I do want to do is I want to invite you to support the solution, and there's ways to do that, getting other people to listen, or you can even buy Red State Coffee. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org and pick up some Red State Coffee. That way the proceeds will, you know, trickle down to us, and we will be able to help pay for some of the things that we're doing. We are, you know, in need of the financial help and support. Bottom line, politics costs money, and I've been telling you that you have to start putting your money where your mouth is, or you just have to shut up and just go back to watching the social justice warriors in the entertainment industries, whether that be sports, music, or what have you, and just disassociate yourself with what the heck's going on. Don't be a patriot anymore. If you're not going to put up, now, I understand it's difficult, and I understand that there are challenges with, you know, finances and so forth, but there are ways you can get involved. If you've got time, you've got resources, you may not have the money, but you do have the ability to actually, you know, support one way or the other, and getting people to listen to the show and at least sharing the content of the show and share the articles. Get people to read the process of Republic Review. It's right there on the constitutional articles on, and just take those PDF files, send them to people and say, hey, look at this information and tell me this is not what we need to be doing. Let's just cut to the chase. Let's get right to the message. The reason why I go through the ratification debates is to prove with overwhelming evidence that there is zero evidence that provides any inkling that there is this thing called constitutional law, case law, and precedence, that the court system could actually rule us any way they want and bend us into any direction that they want. That the court system is limited in jurisdiction to only the enumerated powers. That the federal government is limited to the enumerated powers. All of these things are identical in all of the debates. I could just stop right now and not read anymore. But the fact is, if I don't read these things, then you're just taking my word for it. I think you have a much more profound message when you start rattling off the names of Mr. Spate, Mr. Madison, Mr. Iredell, Mr. Nicholas, Mr. Wilson, so forth and so on and on and on. The fact of the matter is, knowledge is power, and it only becomes power when acted upon, when you actually take that information that you have and act upon it. That's when knowledge is power. So I know that everybody joneses for the news and what's going on. You know, what are they saying? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. The fact is, we have a godsend by having Trump actually taking apart and taking on the deep state. What you see happening is just a beginning of the scorched earth attitude that the progressive communists have towards liberty and those who are opposing them. Would you rather have it to happen to you instead of Trump? Well, then before it starts happening to you, you need to get engaged. You need to get smart, and you need to actually become a part of the solution. Again, don't be a part of the problem. We don't have to be. We do not have to just let things happen. So let me get into the North Carolina debates. The first person we're going to get into, or we're going to talk about, and he talks about jurisdiction now instead of the impeachment process. We're getting into the meat of jurisdiction, limitations, and so forth. And this is Governor Johnston again, and this is what he says. Mr. Chairman, the learned member from Anson says that the federal courts have exclusive jurisdiction of all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution and laws of the United States. The opinion which I have entertained is that they will, in these cases as well as in several others, have concurrent jurisdiction with the states and not exclusive jurisdiction. I see nothing in this Constitution which hinders a man from bringing suit wherever he thinks he can have justice done him. The jurisdiction of these courts is established for some purposes with which the state courts have nothing to do with, and the Constitution takes no power from the state's courts which they now have. They will have the same business which they have now, and if so, they will have enough to employ their time. We know that the gentlemen who preside in our superior courts have more business than they can determine. Their complicated jurisdiction, and we're out of time at this point. So what we'll do is we will just take off. We'll take back at the beginning of the sentence I just ended with, or just was in the middle of, when we come back from the two breaks. So please stay tuned, and we'll be getting into jurisdiction regarding the governor's take on this when we come back after these two breaks. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
And so we just were in the midst of Governor Johnston's commenting regarding the jurisdiction of courts and the federal jurisdiction. And he says, we know that the gentlemen who preside in our superior courts have more business than they can determine. Their complicated jurisdiction and the great extent of country occasions them a vast deal of business. The addition of the business of the United States would be no manner of advantage to them. It is obvious to everyone that there ought to be one Supreme Court for national purposes. But the gentleman says that a Bill of Rights is necessary. It appears to me that it would have been the highest absurdity to undertake to define what rights of the people of the United States were entitled to, for that would say as much as to say they were entitled to nothing else. A Bill of Rights may be necessary in a monarchical government, in other words, a monarchy, a king, queen, so forth, whose powers are undefined. Were we in a situation of monarchical country? No, sir. Every right could not be enumerated, and the omitted rights would be sacrificed. In other words, what he's saying is, if you don't list the rights of life, a great case in point was abortion. Abortion didn't become legal by a black man who was a Nixon appointee to the Supreme Court in his ruling. It didn't become a legal thing because a person doesn't have the right or has the right to terminate a life. He referred to it that there were emanations from penumbras that a person had a right to privacy. The whole point of abortion was introduced because, it wasn't listed in the Bill of Rights. Had we not had the Bill of Rights, then we would have been able to hold the federal government strictly to, and actually, to be clear, it doesn't grant the federal government. It only highlights very specific rights. Bottom line, we have an enumerated constitution, and we have created extraordinary nugatory powers upon our government that they can't mess with our rights to bear arms. They can't mess around with our rights of religious expression. But they do, and that's exactly what they're doing now. So the Bill of Rights has really done nothing other than it contributed to moving those rights down to the states because of the Civil War. You have to understand that. That was the only insights that the divine hand of providence had in establishing these Bill of Rights, so that when the freemen after the Civil War were being punished and persecuted, the Bill of Rights was then pushed down and applied to the states in the 14th Amendment. Anyway, no, sir, every right could not be enumerated, and the admitted rights would be sacrificed if security arose from enumeration. The Congress cannot assume any other power than those expressly given them without a palpable or blatant violation of the Constitution. Such objections as this, I hope, will have no effect on the minds of any members in this House. When gentlemen object generally, it tends to consolidate the states and destroy their state judiciaries. They ought to be explicit and explain their meaning. They make use of contradictory arguments. The Senate represents the states and can alone prevent this dreaded consolidation. Yet, the powers of the Senate are objected to. The rights of the people, in my opinion, cannot be affected by the federal courts. I do not know how inferior courts will be regulated. Some suppose that the state courts will have this business. Others have imagined that the continent would be divided into a number of districts where courts would be held so as to suit the convenience of the people. Whether this or some other mode will be appointed by Congress, I know not. But this I am sure of, that the state judiciaries are not divested of their present judicial cognizance, and that we have every security in our ease and our convenience will be consulted. Unless Congress had this power, their laws could not be carried into execution. Now, Mr. Bloodworth, he's probably the densest person in the room because he keeps on, going on and on over, I still have a problem with this, I still have a problem with this, I still... The interesting thing was that it wasn't any of the real anti-federalist arguments that kept North Carolina from ratifying. It had more to do with, their approbation and their reservations regarding the potential concepts of slavery, because they didn't talk that much about it. But South Carolina and Georgia quickly jumped in because they realized that here was a government that at this point in time, because as they pointed out in the North Carolina debates, slavery was a rising issue, that the northern states were abandoning it quickly, and that if they didn't seize this opportunity, they may not have and would be cast out from the Union. Now, I'm going to point out that during the Constitutional Convention, the two Carolinas and Georgia basically stepped up and said, hey, if you don't allow us to maintain slavery, then we're booking, we're leaving. And that sent the message that they believed that they had confidence of their good people, that being a part of the Union was not as important as maintaining slavery. I truly believe that the sentiments of the Carolinas, at least Georgia and South Carolina, were not necessarily so as far as the people goes. And as you look at the Civil War was basically, the secession of the South, which caused the Civil War, was basically driven by the elitist of the South, who said, we see our slavery being, you know, in jeopardy because we see this animus North, we see this this hate and this abolition growing towards us, and they're hitting us with all of these tariffs and ungodly taxes. And as a matter of fact, they called them the abominable taxes. In doing so, in seceding, the South really sent the message that the elitists felt that they were better off without. And look at how many people died because of, it was like 900 men, I think, total across the southern states who owned the major plantations and so forth, that forced the secession and the slavery instead of just letting it go. Those men probably should have been held accountable for the crimes that they committed and or wanting to continue to perpetrate the what I consider a sin upon humanity. Slavery is a sin, and I want you to understand communism is basically the innovation of slavery from a person to the state, because we become slaves to the state. The state dictates everything. That's one of the reasons why I keep saying you got to be happy that Trump is right now keeping them at bay. The communist movement is growing, and it is growing because of our school system. The only thing that will stop the school system continuing to indoctrinate our children is Republic Review. It removes the federal government's influence over the schools. States can take their schools back, and states can actually start allowing the Bible or whatever they want in their education system. Think about that. If you want to really turn this country around, that's just one of the things that Republic Review resolves. It gets the federal government out of all the things it has no enumerated and delegated powers to do, the powers that it has usurped from the states. So anyway, Mr. Bloodworth, Mr. Anti-Dense Federalist, he states, Mr. Chairman, the worthy gentleman last up has given me information on the subject which I have never heard before. Hearing so many opinions, I do not know which is right. The honorable gentleman has said that the state courts and the courts of the United States would have concurrent jurisdiction. I beg the committee to reflect what the consequences of that would be. It has never considered that trial by jury was one of the greatest rights of the people. I ask whether if such causes go into the federal court, the trial by jury is not cut off, and whether there is any security that we shall have justice done us. I ask if there be any security that we shall have juries in civil causes. In criminal cases, there are to be juries, but there is no provision made for having civil causes tried by jury. This concurrent jurisdiction is inconsistent with the security of that great right. If it not be, I would wish to hear how it is secured. I have listened with attention to what the learned gentlemen have said and have endeavored to see whether their arguments had any weight, but I found none in them. Many words have been spoken and long time taken up, but with me they have gone in one ear and out the other. That's probably the most honest thing he said. It would give me much pleasure to hear that the trial by jury was secured. Now, Mr. McDowell, who is another anti-federalist, says, Mr. Chairman, the objections to this part of the Constitution have not been answered to my satisfaction. And we've got another heartbreak here. So we're going to get into what Mr. McDowell says as an anti-federalist and says that, hey, this trial by jury is, you know, got to be protected. And then Mr. Speight really answers him. But we'll be right back with this anti-federalist perspective on trial by jury and then getting into how I believe that they solved this once and for all. Here we are.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so now Mr. McDowell basically starts off and says, Mr. Chairman, the objections to this part of the Constitution have not been answered to my satisfaction yet. We know that the trial by jury of the vicinages is one of the greatest securities for property. Now, when he says vicinages, that means of that vicinity. In other words, that local area, locale, what have you. If causes are to be decided at such great distance, the poor will be oppressed in land affairs. Now, not that they really cared about the poor, at least these opulent elitists who were trying to maintain their state dominion and so forth. Anyway, particularly the wealthy suitor will prevail. A poor man who has a just claim on a piece of land has not substance to stand it. Can it be supposed that any man of common circumstances can stand the expense and trouble of going from Georgia to Philadelphia there to have a suit tried? And can it be justly determined without the benefit of a trial by jury? These are the things which have justly alarmed the people, which made the people revolt from Great Britain. The trial by jury, the great safeguard of liberty, was taken away, and a stamp duty was laid upon them. This alarmed them and led them to fear that greater oppressions would take place. When they resisted, it involved us in a war and caused us to relinquish a government which made us happy in everything else. The war was very bloody, but we got our independence. We are now living away our dear bought rights. We ought to consider we are about to do before we determine. All right, he said, let me correct that. He says, we are now giving away our dear bought rights from the revolution by not having this trial by jury. Now, Mr. Spate says this, Mr. Chairman, the trial by jury was not forgotten in the convention. The subject took up considerable time to investigate it. It was impossible to make any one uniform regulation for the states or that would include all cases where it would be necessary. It was impossible by one expression to embrace the whole. There are a number of equity and maritime cases, and in some of the states in which jury trials are not used. Had the convention, because he's pointing out that some of the states did not have jury trials, had the convention said that all causes should be tried by jury, equity and maritime cases would have been included. It was therefore left to the legislature to say in what cases it should be used. And as the trial by jury is in full force in the state courts, we have the fullest security. So I think he made a pretty good explanation as to why. It's the same thing with common law, why they didn't dictate common law to the states. It was left to the states to decide how they wanted to function. But it didn't change because it did become an amendment in the Bill of Rights. Anyway, this is Mr. Iredell, and this is what he has to say. And there's a little bit of a thing going back and forth between him and Mr. Bloodworth. He says, Mr. Chairman, I have waited a considerable time in hopes that some of the gentlemen would fully discuss this point. I conceive it to be my duty to speak on every subject whereon I think I can throw any light. And it appears to me that some things ought to be said which no gentleman has yet mentioned. The gentleman from Hanover said that our arguments went in one ear and out the other. This sort of language on so solemn and an important occasion gives me pain. And then this little note that was written by the scribe says, Mr. Bloodworth had declared that he did not mean to convey any disrespectful idea by such an expression, that he did not mean to absolute neglect of their argument, but they were not sufficient to convince him that he should be sorry to give pain to any gentleman that had listened and still would listen with attention to what has to be said. Mr. Iredell then continued by saying, so there's this little thing that arose because you got to understand that now Mr. Bloodworth was basically called out for disrespecting all of these good gentlemen. And you got to remember, they had duels back then when they felt that their honor was impugned and they could basically turn around and say, well, I'm going to challenge you to a duel, Mr. Bloodworth. That's why they were quick to, you know, be respectful, apologize. Boy, the days of duels need to come back, right? As a matter of fact, I think some of these antics by Schiff and other people, if we had duels, those things would not be happening. And Mr. Iredell goes on and says, I am by no means surprised at the anxiety which is expressed by gentlemen on this subject. Of all the trials that were ever insinuated in the world, this is my opinion, or instituted in the world, this is my opinion, is the best and which I hope will continue the longest. If the gentleman who composed the convention had designedly omitted it, no man would be more ready to condemn their conduct than myself. But I have been told that the omission of it arose from the difficulty of establishing one uniform, unexceptionable mode. This mode of trial being different in many particulars in the several states. Gentlemen would be pleased to consider that there is a material difference between an article fixed in the Constitution and a regulation by law. An article in the Constitution, however inconvenient it may prove by experience, can only be altered by altering the Constitution itself. Now, I want to reemphasize this right here, because what is he saying? He is saying that you cannot make a minor little change by a regulation or a statute, that the only way things can be changed that exists in the Constitution is by amendment. So I'm going to read it again. An article in the Constitution, however inconvenient it may prove by experience, can only be altered by altering the Constitution itself. In other words, when they had a problem with the Electoral College and they changed the process, they didn't just change it by statute the way they've been doing it today in giving the party system full leverage, control, and advantage through the state legislatures, that the party and the legislatures were working together, and they have ripped away our actual, the electoral process. Why is this important? Because if you look at how many Electoral College votes would have gone to Trump, or would have gone to, heavens forbid, McCain, or even Romney, we would never have had Obama. We probably wouldn't have had Clinton either. The problem is, we still would have had the Bushes. Anyway, he goes on and says, which manifestly is a thing that ought to be done, which not to be done often. In other words, we don't want to make often, we don't want to oftenly, or, you know, regularly change the Constitution with alterations or amendments. When regulated by law, it can be easily altered so as best to suit the convenience of the people. That's why they didn't include it, because if it's not included, the federal government has no power over that. Had there been an article in the Constitution taking away that trial, it would justly have excited the public's indignation. It is not taken away by the Constitution, though that does not provide expressly for a trial by jury in civil cases, it does not say that there'll be no such trial by jury. The reasons of the omission have been mentioned by the member of the Great Convention, Mr. Spate. There are different practices in regard to this trial in different states. In some cases, they have no juries in admiralty and equity cases. In others, they have juries in these cases, as well as in the suits at common law. I beg leave to say that if any gentleman of ability and knowledge of the subject will only endeavor to fix upon any one rule that would be pleasing to all the states under the impression of their present different habitats, he would be convinced that it is impracticable. If the practice of any particular state had been adopted, others probably whose practice had been different would have been discontinued. See, these are the salable points that these other men just don't get it. They just want it their way and only their way, instead of allowing the states to have the freedom and luxuries to choose. This is a consequence that naturally would have ensued had the provision been made in Congress itself. But when the regulation is to be law, as the law, when found injudicious, can be easily replaced, a majority may be expected to agree upon the method, since some of the method or other must be tried first. And there is a greater chance of the favorite method of one state in time is preferred. It is not to be presumed that Congress would declare to deprive the people of this valuable privilege. Their own interest will operate as an additional guard, as one of them could tell how soon they might have occasion for such a trial themselves. The greatest danger from ambition is in criminal cases, but here they have no option. The trial must be by jury in the state wherein the offense is committed. And the writ of, because you got to remember, the federal government had no jurisdiction over crime. Jefferson pointed this out. The only crime that they had jurisdiction over was counterfeiting, treason, and then crimes committed on the high seas and against laws of nations. I mean, that was it. Anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so we're going to pick right back up where Mr. Iredell was talking about the importance of trial by jury when it comes to crime. And he says this: the greatest danger from ambition is in criminal cases. But here, they have no option. The trial must be by jury in the state wherein the offense is committed, and the writ of habeas corpus will in the meantime secure the citizens against arbitrary imprisonment, which has been the principle of tyranny in all cases, because the protection of the writ of habeas corpus is written in the Constitution in Article 1, Section 9, and in Section 10. Because the states are not allowed to suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Anyway, nor can the federal government do it, but only under martial law. And martial law can only be called for when the state's particular militia. So it only occurs in the states where the militias are deployed to deal with issues within that state. So it has to be the state where the militia not is just deployed, but deployed in operating to stop insurrection, invasion, or what have you. That's when they suspend habeas corpus and those types of constitutional protections. Anyway, as to the clause respecting cases arising under the Constitution and the laws of this union, which the honorable member objected to, it must be observed that laws are useless unless they are executed. At present, Congress have no powers which they cannot execute. After making laws which affect the dearest interest of the people in the constitutional mode, they have no way of enforcing them. The situation of those gentlemen who have lately served in Congress must have been very disagreeable. Congress have power to enter into negotiations with foreign nations, but cannot compel the observance of treaties that they make. They have been much distressed by their inability to pay the pressing demands of the public creditors. They have been reduced so low as to borrow principal to pay interest. Such are the unfortunate consequences of this unhappy situation. These are the effects of the pernicious mode of requisitions. Has any state fully paid its quota? I believe not, sir. Yet I am far from thinking that it has been owing altogether an unwillingness to pay the debts. It may have been in some instances the case, but I believe not in all. Our state legislature has no way of raising any considerable sums but by laying direct taxes. Other states have imports and imports of consequence, such as Virginia. These may afford them a considerable relief, but our state perhaps could not have raised its full quota by direct taxes without imposing burdens too heavy for the people to bear. Suppose in this situation Congress had proceeded to enforce their requisitions by sending an army to collect them. What would have been the consequence? Civil war, in which the innocent must have suffered with the guilty. Those who were willing to pay would have been equally distressed with those who were unwilling. Requisitions thus having failed of their purpose, it is proposed by this Constitution that instead of collecting taxes by the sword, application shall be made by the government of the individual citizens. If any individual disobeys, the courts of justice can give immediate relief. This is the only natural and effectual method of enforcing laws. I want you to understand, they were just talking about direct taxing. Most people, the libertarians and other people, taxation, theft, and all this stuff that they don't have any right. The Constitution was pretty clear that the federal government actually did have the ability to tax, but they only had the ability to tax people, because it is kind of an attack when they come to take your money. They only have the ability to tax you for the things that they have the enumerated powers to spend that money on. Now, I ask you, how much money would they need if they weren't spending money on things they had no enumerated power, no jurisdiction over, such as health care, such as welfare, such as housing, such as energy, such as education, and so forth and so on? If you understand my point, the federal government's insatiable desire to keep on raising taxes and spending us into oblivion would go away if we were enforcing the Constitution and kept them within the framework. But because we haven't done that, nobody is addressing the real problem. The problem isn't abortion, illegal immigration. The problem isn't education. The problem is compliance to the Constitution, because once they comply, all those problems go away. So let me move on. Mr. Iredell says this: as to the danger of concurrent jurisdictions, has any inconvenience resulted from the concurrent jurisdictions in sundry cases of the superior and county courts of this state? The inconvenience of attending at a great distance, which has been so much objected to, is one that would be so general that there is doubtful but that a majority would always feel themselves and their constituents personally interested in preventing it. I have no doubt, therefore, that proper care will be taken to lessen this evil as much as possible, and in particular, that an appeal to the Supreme Court will not be allowed but in cases of great importance, where the object may be adequate to expense. The Supreme Court may possibly be directed to sit alternately in different parts of the Union. So that was his speculation, because Congress had the responsibility of laying out how the federal court system was supposed to be. And Congress still has that power. But interestingly enough, he points out that, you know, there's this concept that the Supreme Court, and I want you to understand this, I tried to point this out to people, the Supreme Court has a passive role. They can't reach down. This concept of judicial review for them to cherry pick what cases they want to take, that is tantamount to activism. It is one thing that things be put in a lottery for the Supreme Court, But the biggest and most important thing is that the Supreme Court must have jurisdiction. Abortion and those types of things, they should not have any jurisdiction. And any ruling that comes out that actually bleeds over into issues and matters that they have zero jurisdiction, like health care, housing, and those types of things, I'm sorry. It should be ruled as unconstitutional, and the jurists, those who are a part of the Supreme Court, should be either reprimanded or removed for bad behavior. Because they should know and understand where the light of their responsibility shines. And it only shines on enumerated cases and enumerated powers in the Constitution. Anyway, I'm sorry for getting passionate. With regard to a Bill of Rights, this is a notion originating in England where no written constitution is to be found, and the authority of the government is derived from the most remote antiquity. Magna Carta itself is no constitution, but a solemn instrument ascertaining certain rights of individuals by the legislature for the time being, and every article of which the legislature may at any time alter. This and the Bill of Rights, also the invention of later times, were occasioned by great usurpations of the crown. Contrary as was conceived to be the principles of their government, about which there was a variety of options, But neither that instrument nor any other instrument ever attempted to abridge the authority of Parliament, which is supposed to be without any limitation whatever. Had their constitution been fixed and certain, a Bill of Rights would have been useless, for the constitution would have shown plainly the extent of the authority which they were disputing about, of which use there can be a Bill of Rights in this constitution. Okay, of what use, therefore, can a Bill of Rights be in this constitution, where the people expressly declare how much power they do give. And consequently, so you got to understand, they keep on saying the same stuff, and consequently retain all that they do not. It is a declaration of particular powers by the people to their representatives for particular purposes. It may be considered as a great power of attorney under which no power can be exercised what is expressly given. Did any man ever hear before that at the end of a power of attorney it was said that the attorney should not exercise more power than there was given him? Suppose, for instance, a man had lands in the counties of Anson and Coswell, and he should give another power of attorney to sell his lands in Anson. Would the other have the authority to sell the lands in Coswell? Or could he, without absurdity, say, 'Tis true, you have not expressly authorized me to sell such lands in Coswell, but as you had lands there and did not say I should not, I thought I might as well sell those lands as the other.' A Bill of Rights, as I conceive, would only be incongruous, but dangerous. Not only be incongruous, but dangerous. No man, let his ingenuity be what it will, could enumerate all the individual rights not relinquished. Now, I will just say that because this part of this speech is so important, we will pick up right here where we left off at the beginning of Did Any Man Hear Of? I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help, and I hope you recognize the gold that is in these ratification debates. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.